he was not necessarily a great innovator in classical music. He didn't revolutionize the symphony or the string quartet. But working within existing forms, Antonín Dvořák wrote some of the most often played and best loved music around, full of fine orchestration, rhythmic bounce, and wonderfully singable melodies. Our collection of essential classical CDs already has symphonies by Beethoven and Brahms, Haydn and Sibelius, Shostakovich and Mahler, all composers who rewrote the composer's handbook in one way or another. Today, critic Ted Libby is adding symphonies by Dvorak to the collection. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Fred.
Now, every orchestra that has much of a recording contract at all has done Dvorak symphonies, but you have a clear favorite here, the LSO, the London Symphony, and István Kertész.
Yeah.
And how did you get to know this conductor?
This is something that goes back to the time these recordings were actually being made. I mean, I was struck by the quality of the music making. I thought, my goodness, this is a modern-day Bruno Walter. This is a conductor with a great inner feeling for music. And now I don't know how I came by that wisdom at the age of 15 or so, but that's what I thought. And when I learned that he was going to be guest conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra in Baltimore, I had to go. I had to go hear him. I was too young to drive, so I got my mother to drive me down, and we sat through this concert of the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by this unknown István Kertész. And at the end, it was the most amazing thing. He did a Dvorak symphony. He did the sixth symphony in Dvorak, which I'd never heard before in my life. So the discovery of one of Dvorak's great symphonies and of this conductor in the flesh conducting this great orchestra and doing it so masterfully and with such an extraordinary feeling for the music. And at the end of that symphony, my heart was pounding. I was so excited. I dragged my mother backstage so that I could greet the conductor. And we were the only people that went back because it wasn't Eugene Ormandy.
He was a young guest conductor. Mm. Nobody knew him. Nobody really cared.
Right. They all gave him a standing ovation and walked out of the hall. You know? And I had to go back and meet him, and I did. And the tragic thing. I went off to college a few years later. He continued to make glowing recordings, including the complete set of Dvorak symphonies. And then he drowned in the Mediterranean in the spring of my senior year of college, and I was just devastated. And this was someone that I felt was going to be one of the greats of the age, and certainly even someone that I really hoped I might study or work with.
And he was only 43 years old at the time, the same age as Bernard Haitink and Lauren Mazel, among others. We're going to hear a section here that begins very simply but then blooms. What are we about to hear?
This is one of those beautiful themes that the Dvorak so prodigally strews through this symphony, showing how you could take material that has a kind of ethnic feel to it. He was writing music with an American flavor, so there's a folkish pentatonic melody, and he builds it out into this beautiful sort of expansion, this wonderful little moment, just to show what he could do with this material. And the way Kertész and the London Symphony play it, it is the soul of innocence, and then it builds warmly and beautifully as it goes along, as part of the way he conducted to get that sense of movement and momentum into the music.
It's the kind of simple melody that you might hear in a work by a rudimentary American composer, but then he takes it somewhere. He really moves it. And in this performance, István Kertész really gives it a sense of forward momentum. And Ted, what is it about this man who was in his mid-30s at the time, István Kertész, what is it about his Dvorak that you find so striking?
What I like about the way he did Dvorak was that it was always so spontaneous. Everything was very, very well structured. He could build climaxes very convincingly. He had a natural approach to this music rather than a studied one. Yet he was aware of the points that had to be made. He made them, and yet it all flowed naturally from him. And you could see it in his physical gestures as well. He was a graceful conductor, and one obviously whom the musicians enjoyed working with, because he let them make music. And that's what it's really all about. And even as a young man, he understood that. He wasn't trying to impose his will on an orchestra. He was trying to get the best out of them. And especially an orchestra like the London Symphony, which is a self-governing body, that went a long way.
We're going to hear a recording from December of 1966 now. István Kertész leading the London Symphony Orchestra, the Symphony No. 9 by Dvorak, the final movement, that is. And Ted, will we hear the grace of Kertész that you were talking about here?
Absolutely. The grace is there, and so is the warmth and the mellowness that he made a part of his conducting. Also, passion. There's this very dramatic sense in which the final movement of the symphony builds up to the conclusion, and Dvorak looks back at themes from earlier in the symphony to build a very, very powerful final argument. Kertész, again, in his element with the London Symphony, showing how that can be done without sacrificing any grace at all.
All right. István Kertész conducting the London Symphony. Ted Libby, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, Fred.